from Bobby Osinski's Inner Circle. I'm Bobby Osinski, and this is a show all about music, music production, and the music business. My guest today is artist manager Nicholas Mishko. First of all, it had to happen. For quite some time now, Facebook and YouTube and Twitter and just about any other social platform has been gamed. So when you look at the number of views, when you look at the number of likes, you don't know for sure whether those were earned legitimately or whether, in fact, they were bought. We thought for the most part that streaming services like Spotify and Apple Music were immune to that, but it turns out that's not the case. If you do a Google search for Spotify promotion, you will find dozens of companies that will advertise their services that will get you anywhere from 10,000 to 100,000 Spotify plays, for anywhere from $5 on the low end to about $300 on the high end. For between $200 and $300, you can pretty much get 100,000 Spotify plays. Now, to take it one step further, if you actually buy a bot for $97, you can program it to automatically click on a playlist and go from song to song on a free tier and a paid tier. It doesn't matter. And now we're seeing more and more of this happening. So if you're a record label or a manager, you can't even rely on those kind of numbers to evaluate what a particular artist is actually doing. Now, before you run out and do this, understand that this definitely violates Spotify's terms of service, and you will be expelled forever. And it's already happened to a number of artists where they've been found out and they'll never be on Spotify again, at least with that artist's name and with their current registration credentials. So beware, if you're going to do this, just like with everything else on all the other platforms, you find that after a while, people begin to learn how to game it. And as a result, the data that you see is no longer trusted, which is kind of a shame. Now, it goes a step further here from the standpoint that you can actually make money by doing this, because the more Spotify plays you have, the more you're getting paid. Now, you're not getting paid a lot for each play, but you are getting paid. So it's working a couple of ways in your favor. But again, you have to be very careful if you're willing to do this. Still comes down to the old-fashioned way. If you earn your plays and your streams and your views, it's going to be better for everybody in the long run, especially you. If you have any questions or comments, send them to questions@bobbyownercircle.com. The second edition of my Social Media Promotion for Musicians Handbook is now available on Amazon, iBooks, Ingram, and a bookstore near you. It's the manual for marketing yourself, your band, and your music online, and covers how to use virtually every important online platform for promotion. Also, you might want to check out my courses at BobbyOsinskiCourses.com. Now, I think we're all under the impression that music helps you concentrate. It never worked for me personally. Whenever I listen to music, it captures my entire attention and I just can't do anything else. So generally speaking, if I have to do something creative like write, I never have music on in the background. But you find that a lot of people do. And for a long time, the thought was, and the studies showed, that music could actually help you with a particular task. This was actually called the Mozart effect, and it was discovered in the 1990s. And it was based more on spatial tasks, where the efficiency increased immediately after listening to Mozart. So for a while there, everybody thought, well, let's listen to Mozart and we'll get really smart. Well, it turns out that further studies, and some recent ones especially, found out that it wasn't really due to Mozart, to the type of music. The efficiency increase was due mostly to the type of mood you're in and the type of arousal. So now it's been renamed the mood and arousal effect. In fact, recent studies have found that you perform most tasks 40% poorer in the presence of music. And it doesn't matter whether you like the music or not, you're going to have much poorer performance. And guess what? Your performance is going to be even poorer if you're listening to music with lyrics. Now, there is one exception. If you're doing something that's really creative, sometimes that creativity can actually increase if you're listening to music that you like. But I think for the most part, the whole idea of listening to music to help you concentrate, to help you with a particular task, it's been found that that's not the case. So as much as we'd all like our music to have a positive effect on all aspects of our listeners' life, that's certainly not the case, at least when it comes to concentration. Nicholas Mishko is an artist manager who understands both modern artists and audiences. After a stint at APCO Music and Records in New York City, he watched deals for music by legacy artists like the Rolling Stones. That left Nicholas well-armed for negotiating recording and publishing contracts for his artists. That's a skill that many young managers don't have today, and one that makes his services so attractive. We spoke at length about management via phone from his office in Ohio. Tell me about your management company.
Okay. Well, I've been managing bands full-time for the last, 5 years now. So 2012 was when I officially launched 10 and 8 Management. Before I managed bands, I worked in New York City for a major label, APCO Music and Records, and I did the royalties and the licensing and publishing. I worked in those departments. And some of our clients were the Rolling Stones, The Who, Chubby Checker, Question Mark and the Mysterians, a lot of old school cats, some early Bob Seger stuff. And I did that for 5 years, and it's cool to see all those, those classic rock artists, and it gets to be very repetitive. And I took on one artist, after 5 years of working at APCO, and then one artist turned into three, and I was like, I think I got something going on here. And I loved working more directly with the artists. Long story short, I launched my management company. Three artists and a laptop turned into, now I've got three employees, an office, 16 clients, one overseas, and 5 years later, and I haven't looked back since. So that's kind of me in a nutshell.
Are you just a management company, or are you a talent agency as well?
Just a straight management company. We do book events, but we try to leave that towards the agents. We have enough to worry about, and you have to be a special, God bless all the booking agents I work with, all the troubles that they put up with. So we try to, outsource that to them. But as far as, we manage bands, we manage artists, we take care of their tours, we take care of, making sure that their copyrights are done, their ASCAP, their BMI, all that stuff, their day-to-day business is taken, their affairs are in order. So that's what we do, make sure that they get paid, make sure that, the royalty statements come in, make sure the tours keep coming in, sponsorship deals, just, all the day-to-day business stuff for the artists. We try to take all the weight off their shoulders so they can focus strictly on the music.
Well, let's take a step back for a second. Tell me how you got to APCO.
Okay. Let's go back in time here. So before Facebook and social media, I sound old when I say this, but back when not even LinkedIn was a thing. I graduated college, and I knew I wanted to work in the music business. And I read books, I read Rolling Stone magazine, and everyone that I ever read about, they're like, you have to get an internship. So I applied and applied and applied. And I got my first internship at a little record label in New Jersey called Rockridge Music. They were doing, so this is before APCO, the summer before APCO. And, I did it for a summer. I learned, pretty much the ins and outs of what a little independent label does. And from there, I was like, I really want to stay in this business. And over 300 resumes later, I probably applied to every label, every major label, you name it, from Nashville to New York to California. And after a bunch of interviews, I got in with APCO. And, I spent 4.5-ish years there. So
that's an interesting label to be with, just because of the legacy.
Oh, yeah.
And the fact that there's a lot of, for want of a better term, industrial knowledge there, especially on management, and because Alan Klein, of course, came from management. So I would imagine that would have been a really good place to start your career, to learn about things on a major level.
At the time when I started there, I did my research and, but as the time progressed and I worked there longer and longer, you learn the history and you find, after, a few months of being there, you finally realize, like, all you almost is like, wow, like the all the history there. And then, you're working at the company. His son runs the company now, Jody Klein. The company itself and the staff, amazing people. Like, they've told me that if there's ever a time I want my job back, I can have it. I consider that company family. But you're absolutely right. And it's funny, I'm 32, and I deal with a lot of younger artists and a lot of people. At Abco, is a lot of old school music business, and I think you're absolutely right there. To start my career there, my music business career there, and knowing how to do the royalties and how to dig deep and comb through the numbers and everything, it really helps me. And yeah, because when I say APCO to a lot of, I get the older generation in music business, they smile, some smile, some smirk, some under, some know, some know the history, some, but yeah, it was a great company to work for, and I still talk to a lot of my mentors still over there today.
I recently read Alan Klein's biography, and it was fascinating because he was a very complex man. Just to have contact with that company on the level that you did, the intimate level, I think is, again, one of those things that you probably couldn't pay for in terms of knowledge of how to do things, or at least the way it was done old school wise, as you say.
Yeah, and it's, I think I know what you're talking about with this, but I have it right here in my office. I'm looking at it right now. And it's, when that came out, I had to get it because it was like, I worked in that company for so long. And, it was surreal just to be, being able to, I was like 22 years old and seeing a check for, Mick Jagger or Keith Richards, and just, seeing all the royalty statements from the famous movies that their music was in, Goodfellas, trying to think from the other, it was just, it's surreal. So, but yeah, I wouldn't trade that. I think it was a good company to start my business off and, my career off and learning, the music business.
Now, that being said, as you said, it was very old school because it's an old school company with legacy clients. But you have what I would think would be very new school and modern, because you almost have to be with younger clients, and the music business is done differently these days. So how have you found that, the dichotomy between the old school that you kind of knew with Abco and now what you have to do as a manager?
I think as far as the old school versus the new school, a lot of, with the old school, I guess more results, less talking, if that makes sense. A lot of, show me the money. Let's make it happen. I'm dealing on that end versus the new school. I think, using the stuff I learned at APCO, the very first thing for my clients, being younger, newer artists, royalties, first and foremost, setting up their ASCAP, their BMI, getting their tour royalties, knowing how to audit a record label royalty statement. It's really benefited me because, knowing how to do that. And I've even had other managers reach out to me. Oh, I've heard you know how to do this and that. And, you know the royalty rates and the mechanicals and this, and you know how to get the money. And it's really benefited.
Now, all that being said, that's all changed too, because old school was getting it from mechanical royalties from sales and from radio airplay and from licensing. And now everything is so different, because now we're talking about digital royalties coming from streaming. for the most part.
Yeah.
And it's a completely different mindset. I know that there are people that are in the music business, have been in the music business that I know for a long time. And this is accountants. These are managers. These are publishers that still can't get their arms around the current state of the art is there. So how do you approach that?
As far as it's not easy. It's very difficult to stay on top of on everything. Like, for example, when I worked at APCO, like I remember seeing in, you know, being in meetings and, you know, discussing as far as, you know, chargebacks from brick and mortar stores and, you know, sending product off to, you know, to stores to be placed on the shelves. And now that doesn't happen so much. Now everything's, as what you said, digital. Just staying on top of what's the number one medium that people want to get music. It's a lot of reading of, I guess, how I do, a lot of reading of your music business blogs, trying to, you know, what's this artist is big at the moment. What are they doing? Oh, they're pushing their Spotify. Oh, they're landing on playlists. They're doing this kind of promotion on Facebook. I think just kind of mimicking what's successful for other people and trying to use that to, you know, push my artists.
Yeah, I get it. That being said, when you get a new artist, what's the strategy that you have for that artist? The reason why I bring that up is because these days you can't just have an artist and kind of wing it, because there's too many moving parts.
A lot of chess pieces.
Yeah. Yeah.
What I do is, I have to love the music. I have to. I have to be a fan, because at the end of the day, when I'm pitching it to, you know, a radio person or a label or an agent, I have to. I mean, it's almost like food. Like, hear me out. As far as, you ever try like telling your friend about a dish that you really don't like, they can tell that, like, why are you even telling me about this? But if you tell them about your favorite food or something that you love, they're going to feel your enthusiasm. They're going to want to try it. Same thing goes with selling. Same thing goes with music. If you're a fan of the music, you can sell it. You can pitch it. And people will, you know, there's this hard rock band. They're up and coming. They're doing great things. And they're going to feel your enthusiasm. And they're going to want to check out the band. But so first things first, I have to be a fan of the music. So I found it. So let's say I find the band. I like their music. Okay, first thing, where are they at with their social media? Can they tour? That's a big thing. Can they, do they have the means to tour? What's their family life like? What's their personal life like? Would they be able to go out on the road for a month? You know, get every, I call it building the foundation. You know, do they have a website? Do they have merchandise? Getting everything together. Okay, do they have demos? Do they have a new album? When was the last album released? Assessing everything. And then, okay, are they going in the studio? When would we need that done? Then pitching that to the labels. Are they going to do an independent release? Just basically making the 6 to 12 month plan. That's right out the gate. Because it's a lot of chess pieces, especially tours. Oh my goodness. Like tomorrow, one of my bands over in the UK, they're coming to the United States for 30 days. And the chess pieces of getting a band here to the States from over across seas, so many chess pieces, so many moving parts. So just making sure that, you know, before you get those parts moving, are they oiled up? Are they ready to go? So
how easy is it to book tours these days? And the reason why I bring that up is there seem to be fewer and fewer really good music venues. There's a lot of competition to get into those venues. So how do you deal with that?
A lot of being able to book tours is easier because the information is readily out there. You know, it's pretty easy to get a hold of, you know, who's the talent buyer, who's the, you know, the agent. It's a matter of just, you know, convincing them to buy the tour package, to, you know, want them to spend the money. It is getting harder and harder out there. A lot of music, you know, if it's not the music industry or music venues closing, it's, you know, the talent buyer decides he doesn't want to do it anymore. I can't tell you how many times that you know, a talent buyer. He just was like, I'm done with the music business. And there's a hole in the market. And there's a great music, there's great music venues, but there's nobody buying, you know, tour packages. A lot of people ask me, well, how come your bands don't tour through this area of the country? It's not that they don't want to. There's nobody buying packages at that, you know? So it's very difficult. You got to try to stay one step ahead. As with everything, things cost money. Touring, it's gas, you know, gas prices, buying merch up front. It's, you know, it all costs money, but, you know, we do our best, try to keep them on the road.
You know, I haven't heard of that problem yet where you just mentioned about promoters leaving the business. And I haven't heard of that. I mean, you know, I, obviously there's a certain amount of attrition that always happens, but it seems like it's a little more pronounced these days than it has been in the past.
Like, for example, right here in Ohio, we have, there's like Northeast Ohio, we had one good promoter that he just decided he didn't want to do it anymore. And, you know, you're always, I guess let me retract. You're always going to have someone that's like, oh, I'll put on the show, but it's like, you know, and you get a lot of times people thinking that, oh, I'll buy the package and then that'll be it. And people will, I'll book them and they'll come. It don't work that way.
Yeah.
It's, you know, you got to put up the promotion. It's a lot more than just a Facebook event. You got to get the locals, got to get, you know, try to hit up local radio, try to hit up, you know, their local college stations, try to get the street team. It's a lot in promoting and, you know, pushing a show. So, but yeah, good promoters leading the game. That's a big figure.
How about social media? What's the most important part of social media, or is social media not as important as it used to be for an artist?
It's certain mediums are a lot more prevalent now. It used to, like 3 years ago, it used to be that, you know, push Facebook. Now with Facebook, you're not reaching your audience unless you're paying up. It's pretty much, you know, social media is always going to be important, but right now I'd say the top ones are, you know, you're definitely your Instagrams and your YouTubes. Twitter, not so much. That used to be prevalent 3-4 years ago. You know, Facebook, until someone comes along and builds something better, I mean, you're always going to have it. It's just, you know, I tell my bands, you know, you have to keep them updated. Not only that, to keep your fans updated, it's also, it comes down to a lot of times social media. I mean, if you're not on tour, people don't know you're working for the band. Like, for example, let's say I get a new band and they're not on tour at the moment. They're writing in the studio. Well, Mr. Music Executive in Nashville or New York or LA or Boston or wherever the hell he is, he doesn't know the band's working. But if he goes on social media, oh, they're in the studio. I see a picture on Instagram. Okay, they made a studio video. It lets, you know, maybe I want to invest in, you know, in this band. It shows people that you're working. It shows, you know, sometimes you got to be, you know, the squeaky wheel gets the most grease, and sometimes you got to do that with social media.
What is the best way that you've found for an artist to build his fan base?
I think right now, Spotify and YouTube, I definitely think, because Spotify, if you can get on a Spotify curated playlist, you're having thousands and thousands of people discover your music every week. Same thing goes with YouTube. You put out a great music video, it catches on. I think that'd be really beneficial. Now, with that being said, you know, it's not one of those things where you want to put out 100 videos and, you know, you want to do quality over quantity. Because to me, I look at it as like one music video with 500,000 views, you know, that's a lot better than 10 videos with, you know, 5,000 views. It's, you know, if you have something, even a song on Spotify, you know, a song on Spotify, it's getting millions and millions of plays, that single, like, that's really, any talent buyer in the world, any festival buyer, they're going to be interested. They're going to want to book that band. So I would say your Spotify and your YouTube, if you got some solid numbers behind those, that's really going to help you.
When I talk to artists, they tend to want to play festivals rather than other venues. I mean, festival seems like it's a big thing. In the grand scheme of things, how important are festivals to an artist's career? Is it more important to just get out there and tour? Is it more important to play the right festivals? How does that work in the grand scheme of things, the way you see it?
With festivals, I kind of like to use them as like your anchor shows. For example, let's say I have a band and they want to do 3 weeks on the road. Festivals, they pay more. It gets you in front of more people in one location. You can network, walk the crowds, walk the lines. And, you know, it's everyone essentially comes to you. But I like to pair those up with tours, because if, let's say we have a band out of Cleveland, and let's say they're going to Miami and back. Not even 3 weeks, 2 weeks on the road. You know, they hit all the good markets all the way to Miami. They circle back, come back through Cleveland. But if they got like a festival down in Atlanta, that Atlanta festival, you know, that can fund a majority of the tour, you know, because you're going to get a lot more playing, even festivals like college shows. You know, they pay more. So I could see why bands want to play them. With that being said, it's not the end all be all. Everybody wants to play festivals. Everybody wants to play in front of thousands of people. It's hard, just like everything in the music business. But I think pairing them well, you know, especially if you pitch to a talent buyer and you say, oh, we have a tour, this works out perfectly. And, you know, even if you did like a road to festival XYZ or whatever it is you're playing, you know, a tour to that, and you know, try to pair it up, it's, you know, that works. But yeah, they help. It's just a matter of, you know, touring right, touring smart. Touring does help, and, you know, labels want to see that, you know, agents want to see that. I think touring smart over touring, you can get burned out. I've seen a lot of artists get burned out. You know, they don't see the needle in their career moving, because you should always be trying to grow and, you know, move forward. But as far as, you know, touring goes, I don't think any band should just go out there and just tour blindly. I think they should look at it as like, you know, look at their spot. You even go back and, you know, see what markets you're hitting with your Spotify and your social media, and what cities you have strong numbers in. Hit those markets. Or even if you did, you know, 5 days in one direction, turn around 5 days back, you know, warm up markets. Because you just, if you're out of like Pittsburgh or in New York City and you've never played Atlanta, or you've never played Nashville before, you're not going to have a lot of people at your first show. So you want to warm up the markets. So that's kind of like how the approach I take with the festivals and the touring.
You mentioned labels just now, and given that you have a label background, would you prefer one of your artists to sign with a label or go the do-it-yourself route?
It depends. It really depends on the deal and the situation you have. I mean, look at, you know, there's a lot of artists out there that, you know, they're doing really well on their own, and they're moving a lot of units. I think it's different with every artist, every scenario, and what they need for their career. Not to give you a basic answer, but if an artist finds that they, you know, don't need that team behind them and it's working, you know, it's whatever works for your artist. I find a good solid team behind every one of our artists works really well. We've got a lot of great labels. You know, we work with a handful of great labels, and, you know, they pair our artists up with publicists. You know, I get the agents, and, you know, so you have management, label, publicists all pushing the artists. Well, that being said, I've seen some artists that, like, you know, like I said earlier, they're doing really well. They don't have a label. They have just an agent, publicist, and manager, and they're doing great. So it all comes down to, you know, if the, I guess, money talks, and if the deal is great and it's something that you see, you know, it's like if Sony, if one of the labels over at Sony or Universal presented me with a deal, I'm going to consider it. You know, it's a major label. So it depends on where the artist is at, what they need, and if the deal's good.
Now, speaking of which, since you've been inside of a label, you're probably very astute at looking at label deals. You're aware of what's the standard and what isn't. And I would imagine that makes you pretty good at negotiating a deal.
It's helped. It's definitely helped. There's been a lot of times I can dig deep into it and, you know, why are you giving me a less than mechanical royalty rate? Or why are you, you know, why is this controlled composition? Why you have it worded this way? Or how come there's not, you know, gratis CDs up front? Where's the tour support? It allows me, you know, with my background working with the labels, and it's allowed me to be able to dig deep and ask for your, I guess, I consider them typical things that every artist should ask for, but just your non, you know, if an artist doesn't have any knowledge of music business, they wouldn't necessarily know to ask. So it's definitely, it's helped me. It's helped me a lot. So sometimes, you know, I don't like to pull those cards, you know, show them right at first in negotiations with the label, because, you know, it's, you know, it's the element of surprise. You know, it all depends, like I said, on the deal, but it's definitely helped me.
What's the hardest thing out of all the jobs you do? And I know there's a multitude of jobs that a manager has to do these days. What's the thing that you either find the hardest or you dislike the most?
Well, I have something. Okay. So I would say the hardest thing in the music business is definitely getting the tours. A lot of bands want the tour support. They want to open for the big bands. They want to, you know, they want to do the huge theater tours. They want to, you know, they want to play in front of thousands of people. And the music business is small. It's really small. It's yes, you deal with artists all over the world, but sooner or later you run into a lot of the same people, and everyone knows everyone. And it's a small industry. And a lot of times, you know, deals and, you know, get tours and stuff like that. You know, it's all in who you know, and if you have a huge tour and they're looking for a hard rock band, and you pitch real hard rock band, and then you have 60 other managers pitching or 60 other agents pitching. I think that definitely can be one of the difficult things. Because if you do get a good tour, then that can lead to another one, and it can lead to another one. And from there, you know, good press, and it's, you know, you always want to see your clients, you know, push forward. But I definitely think that has got to be the most difficult thing out of the entire music business, is getting the really good, solid tours for the artists.
Now, that being said, to get on a big tour, isn't there a buy-on?
Yes and no. So we've done a lot of great support tours where they don't, that's kind of a taboo word. A lot of agents don't like to say buy-on these days. They say, can you contribute marketing plans, and or can you contribute what we can do with marketing? Some do come out and say, yes, I want X amount of dollars. But it doesn't happen that much these days, as far as, you have a big tour coming through, and if it fits and you can, you know, you can get through to the agent and the manager and they like your band, you know, and you get put on the short list. A lot of times they're very upfront on what they need, whether it be marketing or, you know, sometimes people think, oh, that money's just going to go out of pocket. Sometimes it does. I'm going to be upfront and I'm going to be completely real with you. Sometimes it does, not all the time, but, you know, sometimes, you know, there's agents, they use it for marketing. They, you know, they hire out a third party publicist. But it doesn't happen all the time. Most agents are upfront, especially if there's money you both refer with. And you know, but as far as being able to contribute marketing dollars and stuff like that for tours, it definitely helps. It helps with everything. So I guess if that answers your question.
Yeah, it does. Yeah, definitely. What do you think is the very most important thing for an artist to have? Is there one important characteristic or trait that an artist has to have to gain success? Aside from the music, of course.
Okay. Yeah. Because I was definitely going to say, I'm a firm believer in, at the end of the day, the music is what, you know, it's that's what sells everything. The artist is great, but, you know, they got to have an image. They got to have, you know, the understanding, the know-how, kind of at least a little bit of the know-how of the music business, knowing that, you know, if you want to be in a band and you want to go on tour, that you're going to miss, I guess, you know, you're going to miss family events. You're going to miss, you know, girlfriends, wives. You're going to miss you know, brothers, sisters events, you know, special things at home. Just, I guess, for an artist to make it, just have that, you know, not be ignorant of what it takes to be in the music business, that it's tough, that it's, you know, it's a long, hard road, but, you know, I'm a firm believer if you work hard enough, you can make it. You definitely can. It's just, it's a lot of, you know, keep grinding, keep, you know, don't take no for an answer and just keep pushing forward.
I guess you would say the same thing for a manager as well then, right?
Oh yeah. You have to develop thick skin. Oh my goodness. I can't tell you how many times a day I get told no. And I just look at it as like, but to me, I look at it as like a personal challenge. Cause when someone tells me no, now I have to sell you. Now I really, cause to me, I look at it as like, no doesn't necessarily mean no for the client. It means come back in 6 months. Why didn't this deal? Cause there's been times sponsorship deal didn't work out, but 6 months down the road, I pitched it again and the artist grew a little bit and it worked out perfectly. Same thing with the label. You know, we're not really feeling the band, but you know, perseverance, you know, persistence, and 6 to 9 months down the road, you know, we pitched you this artist before, but they've grown, they've grown their fan base. They got some new music. Could you check them out again? Oh, wow. We could definitely see their maturity. So it's being able to just keep pushing forward and realize that you're going to be told no a lot. Things take time. Things don't happen overnight. I mean, everything from interviews to deals, it all takes time. I mean, it even took a few weeks for you and us to schedule, an interview. It's, you know, things take time in music business. A lot of artists, a lot of young artists, they want something to happen. They want it right now, overnight. Doesn't happen. Does not happen. So,
you know, Nick, you mentioned sponsors before. How important is sponsorship?
As far as, it depends on what the artist needs. You know, when I pick up an artist and they say, you know, can you get us free stuff? That's not going to happen. You know, I tell them, it's at the end of the day, it's business. We just did an airlines deal that got all of our artists, sponsored by, you know, airlines. We're about to announce that this week, where basically they get to fly anywhere in the world. But that was a lot of back and forth. Like, what can we give them? What they can give us? We've also done, you know, the beer sponsorships. We've done event sponsorships, and it really helps the artist, but it's what the artist can provide. You know, if you have an artist that's just playing a local show, you know, and they want, you know, like a whiskey or a fireball sponsorship, it's really not going to happen. But if you have like, if they're playing like a college show, there's like 500 kids, or I don't want to say kids, 500 younger adults, and they're all in that demographic. They, you know, they're in college and they, you know, drink a certain type of whiskey, and it's, you know, you should give us free handouts or you should give us posters. It's really going to help your, you know, your brand, and it matches your demographic. You know, it's all in the sell. You know, even with instruments, you know, a guitar company, a drum company, they're not going to give an artist a discount if the artist is in tour. But if an artist is on tour, say they're on tour 60 dates, and they're going to be in front of X amount of people every night all throughout the country. And, you know, the drum company gives one of my artists a free kit, and we can say, your kit's going to be seen in front of all these people, or I put on social media, that we're giving them something in return of value for them to give us. You know, so it definitely helps, just, but it's a matter of, you know, give and take, what you can give them and what they can give you. So I tell all my artists, don't go crazy. You know, don't look at it as like free stuff. Look, it's a partnership. What can you give them? It's a business that helps. You have to use that mind frame and think of it as like, what can I do to have that brand help me? And how can I help them? Not look at it as like, oh, I just want free guitar strings. Because if you look at it like that, you're not going to get anything.
Yeah, you know, for a younger artist who doesn't have any business sense or exposure to what business is really like, they can have a skewed view of what's possible and what's available and what's realistic, I think. So, yeah, you hit it in the head.
I agree with you 100%, because a lot of times, you know, an artist, I see, you know, this band, they've got, you know, custom keys of guitars or custom Gibson guitars or Fender. It's like, they don't realize back and forth negotiations, and that band's been touring for 10 months out of the year. And, you know, it's just like we're trying to get stuff to help our brands. They're trying to get stuff to help their brands. And if they're not going to get advertisement and stuff like that, they're not going to want anything to do with you. So yeah, like I said, I agree with you 100%. There could be a lot of ignorant, a lot of like skewed minds on like how it's just not, oh, you're in a band, it's free. It don't work that way. So.
Last question, Nick. What's the best piece of business advice that maybe you learned along the way or maybe someone imparted to you?
Best piece of business advice. It was the very first year I started at APCO. Their senior vice president, Joe Parker, he's a great man. He brought me into his office one time and he told me, he's like, Nicholas, shut the door. And he's like, I've been in this business for a long time. And he's like, best piece of advice I can, he's like, you're young. You seem like you want to be in this music business for a while. He goes, there's a lot of assholes. You know, I don't mean to curse. I don't know. But he said, be that nice guy. Be that nice guy that gets results. And everybody will want to work with you. And from there, I've kind of instilled it in my work ethic of, you know, just being very easy to work with and getting results done, being dependable. And that's gotten me really, really far. There's a lot of, you know, people, they want to be, oh, tough and good. And you don't need to do that. And I think Joe Parker's advice at APCO really helped me in, you know, my work ethic and everything, because it's, I pride myself on trying to be very easy to work with, trying to make, you know, cause if you can make someone else's job easy, they're going to want to work with you again. You know, if they're going to want to do business with you again, they're going to, oh, you know, cause people don't, you know, if you, there's five people in the room and you're the easygoing guy that they like working with you and you get results done, you're going to get picked every time. And you know, that's what I've kind of used and I've stuck with it. And if it's not broke, don't fix it. And so that's what I do. And that's try to be easy to work with and get results.
I totally agree with you, but the irony in that is it's coming from someone in Alan Klein's company. Alan was not noted for being the nicest person in the music business or the easiest to work with. So again, there's a great dose of irony there, I think. I believe in that philosophy myself.
It's been crazy as far. So next year will be 10 years I've worked in the music business, and going from the tail end of the older generation in music business to the new, I guess, music industry 2.0 with all the social medias. It's very, cause it's just as crazy. Cause it's like my very first record label internship. I remember like I was 22 years old sending out hundreds and hundreds of packages to radio stations and calling people. I was 22 years old. I had a notebook full of, you know, record stores in Texas and Utah and, you know, radio stations. I'd have to call them personally. Now the internships are so, it's so different, but it's, you know, I'm only about to be 32, but it's still, I guess it's to me, it's really cool, the change. But like, I speak to, you know, college students that are only 10 years younger than me. And, you know, I tell them, oh, you don't know what it's like to send out 100 posters to shows or have to call up newspapers and radio and not just make a Facebook event and call that marketing and promotion, like really having to pick up the phone and get things done. And yeah, so it's been, you know, I hope to be in the music industry for, you know, the rest of my life. I'm blessed to be able to have done this full time for the last, you know, 10 years. And I hope to continue doing this and we'll see what happens.
To find out more about Nicholas, go to 10and8management.com. That's the number 10 and the number 8 management. That's all one word, 10and8management.com. Thanks for listening and being in my inner circle. Remember, if you have any questions or comments, you can send them to questions@BobbyOInnerCircle.com. To listen to other episodes of Bobby Osinski's Inner Circle, go to BobbyOsinski.com and select the podcast tab, or go to BobbyOInnerCircle.com or find it on iTunes, Stitcher, Mixcloud, and Google Play. At BobbyOsinski.com and BobbyOInnerCircle.com, you'll also find a sign-up form for my newsletter and for alerts for new podcasts. This is Bobby Osinski. I will see you next time.